Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Why war?
Hello. You know, it's been almost 2 years since I made a firm prediction that the Clinton administration would take America into another war. It was in my broadcast of December 21st, 1996, just after Clinton had named his new all-Jewish national security and foreign policy team. That all-Jewish series of defense and foreign policy appointments, coming on top of all Clinton's other Jewish appointments, was a strong signal that should have made every patriot pay attention. Jews usually like to stay in the background and use their money and their media to make things go their way without exposing themselves. Everyone should have been asking, why are the Jews becoming so conspicuous in the Clinton government? Why are virtually all of the key posts in Clinton's second administration now occupied by Jews? What are they getting ready for? Of course, such questions are not politically correct, and so most Americans pretended that they didn't notice that all of Clinton's new appointees were Jews. But I didn't pretend. I asked why the Jews had suddenly decided to stick their necks out by taking all of the key policy-making posts in our government. And I also answered my question. It is, I said, because the Jews are planning to take us into another war. They desperately need another war. After 50 years of turmoil, bloodshed, and minor wars in the Middle East, they still haven't been able to build a viable country for themselves on the land they stole from the Palestinians and their other neighbors. Their neighbors still hate them as much as ever, and their neighbors are becoming more sophisticated as time goes on. Without the billions of dollars in military and economic aid the Jews extort from American taxpayers every year, they could not maintain their military superiority over the rest of the Middle East. If American aid to Israel is ever cut off, Israel will be finished in a hurry, despite all of the weapons of mass destruction it has accumulated illegally. The Jews need a major Middle Eastern war to crush their enemies decisively and to make it impossible for those enemies to wage war against Israel, and they need this war soon. Now they have a totally corrupt president in office in the United States, a president surrounded by Jews, a crippled president who has been backed into a corner by the ongoing impeachment process and the threat of criminal prosecution. The Jews and the Jewish media are the only allies powerful enough to protect Clinton, and he will do whatever they tell him in order to gain even a little support from them. The next president may be a Republican, and I don't mean to suggest that Republicans aren't corrupt or that they have any real patriotism, but at least they're not quite as dependent on the Jews as the Democrats are. Certainly not as dependent as Bill Clinton is now. The Republicans have their own support structure, their own good old boy network, their own fat cats. They try desperately to please the Jews because the Jews control the media. But they still have a few other considerations. Bill Clinton has no other considerations. And I believe that the Jews are now looking for any excuse at all to take advantage of Clinton's weakness and lack of independence so they can use America as their big stick for destroying their enemies in the Middle East. Iraq almost certainly will be their first target, and Iran is likely to be their second target, and the cost to America will be very high. Well, it was on the basis of these considerations last weekend that I prepared my program for today. Last weekend, I believed that before today, the Jews already would have succeeded in dragging us into their war. I could see the bloodlust in Madeleine Albright's eyes. I could hear the barely suppressed gloating in National Security Advisor Berger's voice. The Jews really believed that they had successfully maneuvered Americans into slaughtering their enemies wholesale for them. Again. Then, at the last minute, Saddam Hussein said, "Okay, I surrender. Send your United Nations spies and busybodies back. They can come immediately. I will not oppose them." Oh, what a disappointment that was for Albright and Berger and Cohen and Holbrooke and the rest of that Semitic crew in Washington and New York. Cheated out of their blood orgy they had worked so hard for. For a few hours last Saturday, I thought the Jews might start the war anyway. Saddam Hussein had surrendered, and they were fuming with rage and saying, "Surrender isn't good enough." They trotted out their puppets, Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, and they had them say the same thing. "Surrender isn't good enough." And God, I was hoping that the Jews would be reckless enough to begin launching their missiles at Baghdad despite Iraq's surrender. I really was hoping for that, because such a move would have turned the whole world against the United States instantly. In every country, the corrupt politicians at the top would have had to go along with the popular outrage which would have erupted against Jew-controlled America. And people everywhere would be talking about just who was pulling America's strings. Even in countries such as the United Kingdom and France and Germany, where any criticism of the Jews has been made a penal offense, people would be denouncing publicly the Jewish puppeteers controlling America. Of course, the top Jews could figure those consequences out for themselves. And so, with great reluctance, they reined in Madeleine and her crew and postponed the war until they could manufacture another excuse for attacking. That pretty well made the program I had prepared obsolete, since I had prepared it on the assumption that the war already would be underway when I went on the air today. But after thinking about it, it seems to me that perhaps you still may find some of the comments I had prepared interesting. So, what follows is what I was thinking about last weekend, just before Saddam Hussein surrendered and temporarily scuttled the Jews' war plans. Of course, those war plans depended on more than Clinton's weakness. For the Jews to get away with using America to fight another war for them, they need more than a corrupt and dependent commander-in-chief surrounded by a gaggle of Jewish appointees. They also need to keep the American people deceived. Before they start a war, they need to deceive the American people into believing that we are fighting for American interests, not Jewish interests, that we are fighting to protect America, not Israel. Deception, unfortunately, is all too easy when you have practically all of the mass media in your hands. And oh boy, the mass media are unanimous on this. Ever since the war was aborted last weekend, their disappointment has been obvious. Commentators have been fuming about how we can get rid of Saddam Hussein and replace him with an obedient puppet. They have been raging that an all-out attack will be launched against Iraq without warning the next time the UN has the least bit of trouble with Saddam Hussein. And believe me, with that sort of attitude, there's bound to be trouble. And what are the reasons the Clinton government and the media were giving us last week for going to war against Iraq? Well, what we heard most often is that we must force Iraq to comply with the United Nations directives. Comply or get hit is the Clinton government's policy. I guess if you're a career military person and you're a little bored with sitting around the barracks and you need the adrenaline rush that comes from blowing things up and watching pieces of bodies go flying through the air, that's a good enough reason for fighting. Comply or get hit. it's pretty clear that the Clinton government wasn't planning on U.S. forces taking many casualties, because if many Americans get killed, they were going to need a better slogan than comply or get hit to keep the folks back home behind the war effort. I should be honest and tell you that I don't see anything at all patriotic about forcing anybody to comply with United Nations directives. I am naturally hostile to just about everything involving the United Nations. I don't like the idea of a world bully going around telling countries which aren't big enough to fight back that they have to comply or they'll get beaten up. But if we're going to consider failure to comply with UN directives a good reason for wrecking a country with cruise missiles, hey, I can think of a country in the Middle East which is in violation of a lot more UN directives than Iraq is. Israel has consistently thumbed its nose at UN directives, and no one in Washington has ever told Israel, comply or get hit. Let's understand one fundamental fact. This crusade against Iraq isn't about the United Nations or international security or stopping the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. It's about making the Middle East safe for Israel to continue bullying its neighbors and stealing from them. Every other explanation is lies and hypocrisy. And we really can expect a bigger dose of lies and hypocrisy than usual as the warmongers work to get this war against Iraq started. The media bosses will trot more generals and politicians in front of the TV cameras and have them bluster patriotically about how we're not going to let Saddam Hussein get away with it any longer, by God. And they'll show groups of military personnel cheering when they're told that they're being shipped out to the Persian Gulf to kick Saddam Hussein's behind and keep him from getting away with whatever it is he's getting away with, which mainly seems to be running his country the way he wants to instead of the way the United Nations tells him. They will work overtime at convincing the couch potatoes and the mindless yahoos who like to wave flags and shout patriotic slogans that destroying Iraq really is an act of American patriotism. And as long as the number of Americans killed in a Jewish war against Iraq remains small, the flag-waving yahoos and the bought politicians ought to be able to drown out any dissent from Americans like me who believe that we don't have any reasonable justification for waging such a war. And keeping casualties small ought to be easy, so long as it remains strictly a high-tech war, with us launching missiles against defenseless targets from many miles away. Of course, sometimes wars get out of hand and unexpected things happen. If the Jews manage to get Iran involved in the war also, and that's what they really want to do, what they really need to do, then I think that we stand a pretty good chance of seeing some major terrorist activity in the United States. I know that if I were Osama bin Laden, I'd have been spending my time getting ready for just such a development ever since Bill Clinton blew up that pharmaceutical factory in Sudan. I'd be putting my teams into place in the United States, assembling materials, choosing targets, and waiting for the Jews to provide justification for me to begin killing Americans on a significant scale. Of course, whether Osama bin Laden is as resourceful and as capable as he's said to be remains to be seen. Personally, I have very little faith in the ability of these flea-bitten Muslims to get things done. But we'll see. You know, the media and the politicians would have us believe that there's something inherently immoral about terrorism. That is, they would have us believe that it's not immoral for us to destroy a pharmaceutical factory in Sudan with cruise missiles, But it is immoral for someone like bin Laden to blow up a government building in Washington with a cuck bomb. It's okay for us to take out an air raid shelter full of women and children in Baghdad with a smart bomb, but it's cowardly and immoral for an Iraqi or Iranian agent to pop a vial of sarin in a New York subway tunnel. Really, what should we expect? They don't have aircraft carriers and cruise missiles and stealth bombers. So should we expect them to just sit there and take their punishment when we wage war on them? I think that it is the most reasonable thing in the world for them to hit back at us in the only way they can. It actually takes more courage to be a terrorist behind enemy lines than it does to push the firing button for a cruise missile 100 miles away from your target. And yet, we certainly will see Bill Clinton and every other Jew-serving politician in our government on television denouncing as a cowardly act the first terrorist bomb which goes off in the United States as a result of a war against Iraq. And don't be surprised when the FBI and the CIA announced that they have studied the evidence carefully and have determined that it was Iranian terrorists who built the bomb, so that the Jews will have an excuse for expanding the war to take out Iran as well as Iraq. One thing that acts of terrorism often do is kill a lot of more or less innocent people. Putting nerve gas in a New York subway tunnel would kill more than just Jews. Bombing a government building in Washington would kill innocent secretaries and file clerks along with the politicians and bureaucrats. But of course, our cruise missiles also kill a lot of secretaries and file clerks in Baghdad. Anyway, I really think that terrorism is no more immoral or reprehensible than other forms of warfare. And when we leave people no other choice, terrorism is what we should expect. Sometimes I think that the decision about what's moral and what's immoral is based on the degree of publicity and showmanship with which you kill people. If you go on network television and announce "comply or get hit" before you unleash your cruise missiles, then you can't be called a coward. Then it's legitimate war. But if you simply kill someone or set off a bomb without prior warning, you're considered a criminal and an outlaw. And certainly, that's the way the Jewish media have been portraying Saddam Hussein, a criminal and an outlaw who doesn't play according to the rules. But what about our gallant little Jewish ally in the Middle East? That brave little country of Holocaust survivors and junk bond promoters, that God-given light unto the nations, which has become the world headquarters for the white slave trade. What about Israel? I think I've already mentioned that Israel has ignored one UN resolution after another over a period of decades. Israel has seized the land of its neighbors and simply ignored the United Nations when told to give it back. Certainly, Israel has been far more conspicuous in displaying its contempt for the international community than Iraq has. Israel has carried out massacres of civilians and has supervised other massacres. I'm thinking of the cold-blooded butchering of hundreds of Palestinian women and children in the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in Lebanon in 1982. Israel has deliberately shot down civilian airliners. I'm thinking of the 108 civilians killed in 1973 when Israelis shot down a Libyan airliner over Egypt. Israel has launched unprovoked sneak attacks on its neighbors and on the United States. I'm thinking about Israel's murderous attempt to sink the USS Liberty and slaughter her crew in 1967 so the attack could be blamed on Egypt. I suppose that all of these things might be considered waging war, Jewish style, but Israel also has engaged in activity which can only be described as international terrorism, and has engaged in it on a far larger scale than all of her neighbors combined, including Iraq and Iran. I'm thinking of an Israeli letter bomb campaign in the 1950s, which killed and maimed scientists in Egypt. That was Israel's way of maintaining a technological edge over her neighbors. In fact, Israel has been the only country ever to use letter bombs on a significant scale in a campaign of state-sponsored terrorism. I'm thinking of secret Israeli assassination teams shooting and booby-trapping suspected opponents of Israel as far afield as Norway. Israel's state-sponsored terrorism is institutionalized in an Israeli agency called Mossad. Mossad's trained assassins wire bombs to the ignitions of people's cars, mafia style. They'll sneak into your hotel room while you're out, put a radio-controlled bomb under your bed, watch from an adjoining building for the lights in your bedroom to go out after you come back to your room that night, and then detonate the bomb. They send agents armed with exotic poisons into other countries to squirt a few drops on you as they pass you on the sidewalk. Perhaps you remember the fuss a little over a year ago when a Mossad assassination team got caught in Jordan after squirting poison into the ear of a Muslim religious leader. That particular murder mission was personally approved by Israel's current Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, whom Mr. Clinton subsequently hugged in front of the TV cameras. Mr. Clinton has been on television several times in recent days trying to justify the belligerent stance of the U.S. government against Iraq. He has said that it is simply intolerable that Iraq should have weapons of mass destruction with which Saddam Hussein could threaten his neighbors. Really? And what about Israel? You know, the United States has for many years had a policy of preventing the proliferation of modern high-tech weapons of mass destruction, especially nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. A lot of effort has gone into implementing this policy. And yet Israel has flagrantly engaged in building up a large arsenal of such weapons with never a word of reprimand directed at her. Everyone in the U.S. government and in the relevant agencies of the United Nations is fully acquainted with the facts of Israel's theft of both nuclear materials and nuclear weapons technology from the United States and with Israel's subsequent building of a large nuclear arsenal. Everyone understands that Israel has been manufacturing and stockpiling nerve gas for years. I reported just 3 weeks ago about the ongoing fallout in Netherlands from the 1992 crash in Amsterdam of an Israeli cargo plane carrying nerve gas chemicals from the United States to Israel. And just this week, there are reports in the British press about Israel's work on developing Arab-specific biological weapons. Jewish scientists in Israel have been looking at the differences in DNA from Jews and from Arabs and devising viruses and bacteria which will attack Arabs but not Jews. My God, if there ever was a good reason for a preemptive military strike to keep weapons of mass destruction out of dangerous hands, this is it. But instead of putting this inherently criminal nation down, we support it, and we wage war against its enemies. God help us. Thanks for being with me again today.